Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
The race is on, and just like that, Formula One pre-season testing is done and dusted with the completion of the third and final day in Bahrain. And Red Bull's Max Verstappen set the pace, with the best Mercedes lap a second down. We know that's not representative, but what's the real story? I'm Ed Stewart, and joining me to answer that question are Gary Anderson and Mark Hughes. Well, today we saw a flurry of quick lap times towards the end of the afternoon. Verstappen did the best lap of 1 minute 28.960 on the C4 Pirellis. AlphaTauri driver Yuki Tsunoda was second fastest on the C5, so that's the softest available tyre, just 93 thousandths of a second slower. Carlos Sainz third for Ferrari, 0.651 seconds down. Kimi Raikkonen fourth, 8 tenths down. And then Lewis Hamilton fifth, 1.065 seconds down. But of course, headline times can't be trusted. And as ever, Mark Hughes has been following every single lap. So what's the real story as you see it?
Yeah, it literally was every single lap. I put every single lap of the last 3 days into an Excel sheet. Sort of seeing treble at the minute. It's quite interesting when you sort of break it all down. And definitely there was a big step up today from the two Honda-powered teams. So speculate that, you know, maybe they've been allowed to run them a bit more aggressively today because they established the reliability for the previous 2 days. I don't know, but some of it was that the change in the competitive order seemed to be a boost from the two Honda powered teams, and some of it was Mercedes. They were just both drivers struggling with a unstable rear, and really they found very little performance from yesterday, whereas most other teams found a big chunk of performance. Yeah, a combination of the two really completely changed the competitive order from yesterday.
Yeah, it's interesting. I did watch a little bit from turn 11, and the Mercedes, we never really saw Hamilton do anything like what Verstappen did in terms of how he could attack the corner, etc. But yeah, interesting kind of position we see. It's like the reverse of the normal, isn't it, with Red Bull doing the miles and looking quick and Mercedes struggling a bit and having a bit of instability. What do you make of it, Gary?
Yes, I mean, obviously, it's early days. It's the first test. It's been a three-day test. And in reality, you know, the first day was, the afternoon was lost to a bit of a sandstorm, I suppose you might call it. I mean, people still ran, but it really wasn't representative. So it's a very limited amount of running that we've seen from everybody. Mercedes had a bit of reliability problems, but, you know, today was reasonably representative. And on the track, you know, I don't think the Mercedes looked good. That's the thing about it. Never mind the lap time. I mean, they were second slower or whatever it was. But it never looked comfortable. It never looked as though it had, as you say, Mark, that rear-end stability to allow them to really sort of launch it into the corner or stand on the throttle. I mean, even whenever it was okay, you could still hear sufficient, over too much wheel spin, basically, on the exit, especially at the hairpin. So it doesn't look like they got the rear grip there. We can all say it's about tyres and getting the tyres working correctly. And, you know, last year they had the benefit of their DAS steering system. Has that hurt them for this year? Because they had something last year that helped them get the tyres working. So they lost a year of actually, you know, having to get the tyres working within themselves. And it's very easy to sort of turn around and shoot yourself in the foot with that sort of stuff. But, you know, I think the first morning of the test, we saw the Red Bull was a bit tricky. But they got on top of it very, very quickly. And, you know, after lunchtime on Friday, you know, right through to the end of the test, the car looked great. You know, Max was attacking corners like you can't believe. And, you know, Sergio wasn't doing a bad job. He did a competent job. The car looked okay. But I think they were in different sort of levels of what they were trying to achieve. As far as Max, obviously, with the engine turned up a bit, goes out and tries to wring its neck, because that's what he's good at doing. Sergio was somebody that's very good at doing race running and looking after the tyres and trying to, you know, stabilise the race setup as best possible for the future. So they probably were on different programmes because they're good at different programmes. And Sergio will lift his game whenever he has to in qualifying in Bahrain, for sure. And Max will, the setup of the car will benefit from Sergio's input for the race and tyre degradation. So very, very difficult to know. But as I say, my big thing is the Red Bull looked very good. The Mercedes didn't look very good. Whether that's fuel load or not, I don't know. I'm sure Mercedes probably had more fuel in it than Red Bull. How much that is, if it's 10 kilograms or 20 kilograms, I don't know. But I'm sure it was probably more. So I think Mercedes have got a bit of work to do this time. They're very good at doing that and getting to the first race and shocking everybody, I suppose you might call it. But this year it might just be that they have to do it, to be honest.
It certainly tallies with what I was seeing, because with Verstappen, you could see, you know, when a car's just really on it, on the brakes, turning, loads it up quickly, he could really get on the throttle aggressively, as you said, whereas Hamilton, you'd see him in the exit phase of turn 11, which is kind of a medium speed, that uphill left-hander, you could see the kind of car wobbling as he was just struggling to do it, whereas just Verstappen in the Red Bull looked very planted. I don't think the Mercedes was as light or being pushed as hard as the Red Bull, but that doesn't mean I think it was some kind of sandbagging thing. There's clearly some kind of problem there. So, Mark, how serious do you think that problem is? Because talk about a bit of rear-end instability, for example. That can be a small problem or a big problem, can't it?
Yeah, I think they're a little bit mystified at the moment. It seems to be related to the gusting wind, in that the wind is exposing a problem that's underlying with the car. Whether that's inherent in the aerodynamics of that car or whether there's just a specific thing that's not working, they don't seem to have a handle on yet. And mechanically, it wasn't a problem. There were no particular problem getting the tyres into the window, no more than usual. You know, it tends to be very rear limited circuit, and you can easily get the rear tyres too hot, but that's always been the case. They were saying there was no particular problem with that. That didn't seem to be at the root of their problem. So I think, they have to go back and understand both that and the gearbox issue that lost them so much running. And I think it's quite interesting looking at Red Bull in comparison. There's two things there. One is towards the end of last year, when the Red Bull was working really well after Mercedes had switched off development, but the Red Bull continued to get better, they were adamant. They said, no, we're now understanding this car. We're now understanding the aero problem that we had. And if we'd understood it quicker, if we'd understood it earlier in the season, we think the Mercedes was actually beatable. And obviously that sounds a bold thing to say after Mercedes have just absolutely annihilated everyone. But it's interesting that they come here and they've done what they've done. The other thing is that I understand Red Bull now have a chassis engine chassis dyno at the factory, which is something that Mercedes has had for quite a few years. But typically we've seen Red Bull start winter testing with, It's usually Red Bull of those two teams that struggles to put the miles in and takes a little bit longer to get its car quick as a result. But it's sort of inverted this time, isn't it? So I wonder if there might be a link there.
Now, this is all well and good, but there will be people listening thinking, yeah, it's all the usual Mercedes talking things down, sandbagging, not going quickly. So, Gary, how seriously do you take this? And do you think that the aero reg changes are enough to have thrown a little bit of a curveball Mercedes way?
I think it is, really. You know, again, it's the same old deal. Whenever you've got a car that you're exploiting the downforce from it, from the aero surfaces, and there's a big change like we have with the floor, all the stuff that makes that work well in the past, you have to re-optimize, I suppose you might call it. And And, you know, Mercedes might not just have got on top of it. You know, we've always, we sort of talked through the season that probably the high-rate cars would suffer more than the low-rate cars. But if you take it in general, that doesn't look like that. You know, it looks like the high-rate cars have actually benefited from this regulation change. So, you know, Mercedes have always been adamant that their average sort of circuit performance with the low-rate car was better. With the length of their wheelbase and the floor area they've got and the low-rate car, it was a better overall car for the season, not necessarily for any one track. But it does look like these changes now are giving a little bit of a benefit to the higher-rate cars, which is surprising in my book, but, you know, that's what aerodynamics are all about. It's not black and white, or else every car would be, you know, doing the same performance. So it could be that Mercedes have to change their direction a little bit. You know, the AlphaTauri is a high rate car as well. It's, you know, it's a sister of the Red Bull. So that car looks really good. Never mind the fact whether they're going to be on pole at the first race or whether they're going to be quick. You know, all you've got to do is look at the sort of body language of the car, I suppose, and the high rate cars in general had a better, you know, body language, I suppose, if you take the Aston Martin or the Mercedes. They didn't look just as good as what you'd normally see them to be. So I think there might be a bit of a change of philosophy there that they need to look at. It's difficult to do. It's not just a five-minute job of, you know, raising the rear right height. There's a lot of work to do to make that all function. We've always said that. And up to now, Mercedes have proved that the low-rate car was a good solution, but it might be time to change.
Yeah, the AlphaTauri from trackside certainly looked very good and very consistent. Tsunoda was able to attack with it, had the odd small moment, but nothing particularly problematic. Does look like a very solid car. And conversely, the Aston Martin you referenced there was quite unremarkable. It always seemed actually a little bit like the Mercedes, just when a car just doesn't look alive. And you look at it and you think, oh, it just looks like it's either having a big understeer or it's limited a bit on entry so that the driver is not able to attack. So it's really interesting how well that tallies. We should mention Ferrari, Mark. They're a high-rate car. I'm kind of, with each passing day, getting less positive about the Ferrari, having watched it a fair bit today with Sainz at the wheel. It didn't look very convincing, I have to say.
Eventually, Sainz got a sort of respectable-ish performance from it. His single lap late in the C4 was actually a pretty good lap. It's about 9/10 off what the Red Bull did when you make allowances for the tires, but it's clearly not as dynamite as the Red Bull, but I think just from today's performance, it's sort of about as good as they might have hoped for in terms of the improvement. It's a more solid, less problematical looking car than last year's. They did two race sims, one with Leclerc in the morning and one with Sainz in the afternoon. Interestingly, not many of the teams chose to do that. There's only a couple, and asking why. Mercedes was saying, well, for us, there were too many things we needed to find out. Each run's an experiment, and we didn't feel we had the time to do a race sim, you know, because we sort of, it's basically the same car. We already know that we can fuel it up and it'll do a race sim all right. So we needed to find out other things were being prioritized. But Ferrari did one, and it looked okay. In fact, it was the one that Sainz did was probably better than the AlphaTauri, even though the AlphaTauri was a little bit quicker over one lap. They did very, very similar long runs, Tsunoda and Sainz. It was 13 laps, 15 laps, and 20 laps for the stints, starting on the mediums and then two stints on the hard for both cars. And in that comparison, and they were done at about the same time, so the track was roughly similar. In that comparison, Sainz comes out about 10 seconds ahead, even though on single lap, Tsunoda was quicker. But it's sort of in that mix. But as I say, apparently, if we take today as a reading, as the best reading that we've got, it's probably 9/10 9/10 off the ultimate pace.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we'd have to expect that though, Mark, wouldn't we? You know, Saints has done a few Grand Prix, knows how to handle the tyres and bring them in and keep them there as best possible. I think Tsunoda with every lap is learning about that sort of thing. So I think it's one of those situations where for sure Ferrari are in a better position than they were. I think you're about right. It's around that 9/10 or a second slower than the whoever's going to be quick. But it's not enough to take them to the battle at the front. It's enough to maybe get them to the front of the midfield bunch, but it's not enough to get them to latch onto the back of those guys at the front, whoever they be.
It was interesting watching those race runs from trackside, because again, I do wonder if the Ferrari was struggling a bit with the wind sensitivity as well, because I was messaging you, Mark, a few times saying, oh, the science isn't looking particularly good and confident on entry. And on one part of that race run, he wasn't. And then later on, he was beginning to look much more consistent and solid, whereas Tsunoda didn't change a great deal. So I just wonder if that indicates maybe the Ferrari's a little bit more sensitive to that. But actually, I wanted to ask you, Gary, about the wind sensitivity, because we spoke to George Russell after the day, and I was slightly puzzled with the Williams, because I was watching it at turn 11 and it seemed to be doing different things. And I thought, you know, sometimes you see drivers trying a few different things, working out, moving the trade-offs around, shall we say. So sometimes you compromise the entry a bit and you get the mid-corner. But it just seems to be a little bit extreme. So I did say to Russell, well, you seem to be doing that. So was that what was going on, or was I just imagining it? To which his response was, well, yeah, I think you are imagining it, but this was actually down to the wind sensitivity that was having the impact. So it was the old thing with trackside. You're always trying to work out what's input and what's output. And it seemed to be an output consequence of the wind. But interestingly, what he said was that Williams had made a conscious decision to really go for the peak downforce and risk having a slightly peaky and, well, having a peaky and wind-sensitive car rather than a more flat aero map. And as he was saying this set off all my Gary Anderson-related alarms in my head, because this is a big hobby horse of yours. So what do you make of that philosophy? Do you think that makes sense, particularly for a team that's struggling? Because they said, well, we might as well have 10 good races and 13 really bad ones because we're struggling to score points. Do you think that's a legitimate course of action, or do you think that doesn't really make sense and it's just going to be a problem?
I read your article, your column, Ed, on it, so I'm prepared for this one. Just shows I am loyal to the race. But
and I'm sure it set off some of your internal alarms as well.
Yeah, it did. I mean, I don't understand that philosophy in any way, because with all the best will in the world, George Russell in his Williams is always going to be in traffic or turbulence, and that's the same effect as wind. You know, on a clear lap on your own out the track there, you can, you know, go to Silverstone, a big open circuit, and you can be wind affected. That's fine. But with all, you know, again, when there is a chance to score points, he will always be stuck in a traffic jam of some sort, because he's not going to be qualifying on pole. If you can sort of guarantee getting on pole or the front row and being able to blast off into the distance, or maybe only having one car ahead of you, and being quick enough to, you know, have a gap to that guy ahead of you and not be compromised by somebody behind you, then build a car that's aerodynamically sensitive to high levels of downforce and stressing the surfaces. But if you're going to be stuck at best 14th, 15th, 16th in the pack, it's going to be a nightmare. And I would never buy into that philosophy with a team like Williams. Red Bull, yeah, okay, accept it. Mercedes, okay, you accept it. But we've seen on occasions last year, year before, you know, Mercedes get behind somebody and they're moaning like hell about the, you know, the turbulence, they can't overtake, they can't do this, they can't do that. That's just because they have more downforce. They have, you know, optimized the surfaces to give more downforce. Everything's working that bit harder, everything's stressed that bit harder. So change that good airflow that's going to the car by a few degrees or a bit of turbulence in it, it just disappears out the window. So what is the point of at best a mid-grid team building a sensitive car? Somebody tell me that, because I can't relate to it at all.
That's an excellent rant, Gary.
A good rant.
It makes perfect sense. And also, Mark, looking at the times of the Williams is about probably where we'd expect it to be, isn't it? So it's not like they're suddenly throwing in brilliant laps. And I know the conditions, because it was so windy all the way through, even though that wind eased over the 3 days. Russell did say it was about the worst conditions for the car. We're not really seeing anything particularly unexpected there that we wouldn't expect to see from the same aero philosophy or a more conservative one.
Yeah, exactly. And when you look at the two cars that really looked drivable, not like in the way that the Red Bull looked a different league today, but in the way that the drivers seemed to be able to adapt and do anything they wanted with them. It was the AlphaTauri and the McLaren, I thought. Both those cars look very, very drivable, and they look like they've been guided by a philosophy more like Gary's, I would have said, than this peaky chase of peak downforce. It just looks very similar to last year. And actually, interestingly, there's quite a few drivers are saying they were getting, when they were up close to the Williams, they were finding the turbulence was more extreme than behind other cars. As I don't know what the significance of that might be. Do you have any idea on that, Gary?
Again, it's the same deal. If their downforce surfaces are changing, then the turbulence from them will be worse. You know, if you've got good flow over your car and it's consistently good flow over your car, be it producing lots of downforce or not producing lots of downforce, then the car behind you will be getting consistently affected flow, but not variable affected flow. You know, so let's say you take, you know, what is, let's ask the question here, what is peaky downforce? Peaky downforce is something where, you know, you get your front wing angles and you play with them and your flaps and you set them up and you go from, you know, 19 degrees of flap angle for a number just to 20 and you lose everything. Whereas other cars would be, you go from 19 degrees flap angle to 20 and you gain a little bit. You know, if you're running the surfaces so they're too highly stressed, they just fall apart immediately. That affects the car behind you as well. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you can follow something that's giving you a decent airflow, but following something that's got a lot of turbulence coming off it because of the changing airflow, then that makes it more difficult because it's inconsistency. Inconsistency, you know, just bites the driver. That's the problem. The driver gets no confidence in it. You need to give a driver a confident car, a consistent car. And you can see that, as you said, Ed, there, on the AlphaTauri. You know, you could see it was a consistent car. The drivers would get in the car and, bosh, there's a lap time there, you know, almost immediately. They didn't have to sort of fight to get there or struggle. The McLaren looks the same. McLaren looks, you know, a consistent car. Either Norris or Ricciardo can get in it, and, bosh, they've got a competitive lap time there immediately. So that's the only way you can get the confidence into the driver to push to the limit, because he knows what the car's going to do. He can feel the car. Whenever a car's got peaky downforce, it'll just bite him a few times, and then you don't go near that peak because you can't. You just don't have the confidence.
I wonder if it was significant that it was a Williams that the Red Bull was behind when the engine cover got ripped off.
Exactly. I mean, that's only turbulence. That's all it is. You know, whenever Perez was following them there, that, you know, the car's bouncing around all over the place. You know, obviously it was a fixing problem on the engine cover or something. But you could probably monitor that behind all the cars and see which ones were the best or the worst. And that's a typical place where a peaky downforce car will struggle. Down the straight, the ride heights have got low, stuff is stalling because it gives you more downforce when it's not in the stall, but to do that, it'll stall quicker, and the turbulence becomes more and more. So, yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised if the turbulence level coming off the back of the Williams generated that engine cover problem, and if he'd been following a Mercedes or a Red Bull at the same time, that it probably wouldn't have. So it'd be interesting to do that test sometime.
You mentioned the McLaren as well. That did look quite impressive in the hands of Daniel Ricciardo. He was pretty consistent and able to carry the speed. So that's quite encouraging for McLaren. I did also want to mention Fernando Alonso, because it's good to see him back in action. And it was like he'd never been away. The usual commitment on entry. The Alpine doesn't seem like too bad a car. I don't think they've really moved up a great deal. They still look to be in about the same place, but it looks all right, doesn't it, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, it looks consistent. It's losing out somewhere because it looks to be about half a second off the pace of the McLaren, say. But yeah, it doesn't look like it's got a fundamental problem.
Yeah, and as long as their philosophy with a more bulbous design of airbox is working out and makes sense, then they could be in quite good shape. We should briefly mention the tyres. They're running at slightly lower pressures, slightly more understeer balance of the tyres. Gary, we heard a few complaints about getting used to the new spec, the construction's changed. Do you think there's any particular concerns there, or is it just slight tire change? Of course, it's going to take a bit of time to get on top of them.
Well, it's probably going to take a bit of time, but I think what you can do is look at Tsunoda and AlphaTauri at the end of today, you know, the last day of the test. He was able to put tires on the car and go out there and, you know, have them right for the start of his qualifying laps, and he did quite a few of them. So, you know, he's a new driver, inexperienced totally, hasn't tried to be the Mr. Know-it-all by any means. He was just given the opportunity to run a car that's probably on fairly low fuel with new tires on it, and he succeeded every time he tried to go a little bit better. And that means he was able to bring the tires into a nice working window and get them working for a qualifying lap at least. Maybe the race distance will be a bit different for him because that's a different discipline and you need a lot of miles to pull that together. But at least, you know, he was able to take those tires, make them work, whether it was the, you know, it didn't matter what tires he ran, the C3, C4 and C5, I think. And, you know, all of them, he was able to get them working for when he needed them working. So I don't think there's a big drama there. I think anybody that's using it now will be using it as an excuse, and it'll come from the balance of the car more than the actual tire. If you don't have a decent balance on the car, then one end will not start working as quickly as the other end, and that's a bigger, much bigger problem than actually the tire itself.
And I think one team we haven't mentioned at all during testing, we probably should, is Alfa Romeo, simply because people look at the timesheets. They've been in the top six on all 3 days, completed the joint most laps along with AlphaTauri. Alfa Romeo looked decent on track. I mean, ultimately, Mark, it looked pretty much like what you'd expect it to, in that it was reasonably well balanced, but probably doesn't have the peak aero load. I think we probably saw Kimi Raikkonen on, as Gary likes to say, the sniff of an oily rag in the final hour. So we can probably take that Alfa Romeo time as what that car can do.
Yeah, and I mean, Gary's weight analysis, pre-season weight analysis guide had showed you that, you know, historically the difference in weight in between testing and qualifying for that team was not very big. So yeah, I think it looked more competitive than it probably really is, but it looked okay. It looked probably it looks as though it's probably moved away from the Williams a little bit, and the Haas is still roundabout at the back somewhere. But yeah, it looks like it might be in a little sort of no man's land, actually, the Alpha this year.
Don't say we're going to have a Class D classification as well. If they're going to be Class C all on their own, that'll make things too awkward. But you never know. It wasn't such a big bound for them to get to Class B. So they could maybe just sort of latch almost onto the back of that. That would be interesting. But to come back to the big topic, obviously, everyone wants to know where Red Bull are compared to Mercedes. Lewis Hamilton said that Red Bull looks like a different animal this year. Max Verstappen even let through a few little glimpses of optimism. Obviously, nobody's going to declare themselves favourite or anything. They're going to downplay it. But from what we've seen over the last 3 days, do we think that there's a greater chance of a real fight at the front than perhaps we thought there might be over the winter?
Well, yeah, from my point of view, I think that Red Bull have done a very, very good job. Now, if you take that article I did on the rear suspension and just looking at the back of the car looks absolutely fantastic. There isn't one little thing out of place, you know. It is just so neatly done. And any of the other cars, and I include the Mercedes here, you look at it, it's a bit, you know, it's a bit, I don't know what you might call it, clumbersome, I suppose. There's a lot of little things that are in the way of other little things. And it's wrong to say that about Mercedes, but I think with the Red Bull, it's the high rake that gives you that little bit of a visual on the fact that it's so clean and tidy. And obviously the splitters and the diffuser, etc. So I do think that Red Bull have made significant progress. I think the battle at the front could be tit for tat between the two of them, and I hope it is starting the season. But then I do think that there isn't anybody filling that gap up yet in my book. I don't think there is a third team to join them. I think there'll be the gap and then there'll be the next bunch coming along.
Yeah, that certainly seems to be the case. But Mark, are you going to be rushing online to place a bet on Red Bull for Bahrain?
I'm not a betting man, as you know. I think I tried betting on Yana Truly once and it failed. but yeah, I mean, it looks, I mean, forget the comparison to the Mercedes for the moment. You know, Mercedes has got its own particular problems, but just compared to last year's Red Bull, it looks a lot nicer. It doesn't look as demanding a drive. You know, you could see last year when Max really wrung its neck, it was a very demanding car. He was always on top of it. He was always able to, you know, squeeze a lap time from it, but none of the other drivers could. But this looks actually a nice car. It looks just balanced, and you know, it doesn't look as physical a drive, I would say. It just looks like a very, very nice car on track.
The one thing I'd just like to add is just that, you know, Perez could be further away than Albon was last year, and that's no a criticism of Perez, but it's just the fact that if you give Max a better car, he will use every thousandth of a second of it, because, you know, he is an exceptional driver. He does really have an exceptional feel for just ripping lap time out of a car. So it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds, but I think Max in a good car will be absolutely exceptional.
Well, I think that's what everybody is hoping for. Every neutral F1 fan wants to see a battle up the front, don't they, ultimately? The ideal thing would be if Red Bull and Mercedes have similar potential over the season. At least there's a little bit of reason to be optimistic. And I guess the final question, if you wanted to pick a midfield leader, who would you go for, Mark?
Mercedes.
Controversial. That's going to get Twitter going.
Probably AlphaTauri.
Oh, interesting call.
Yeah, I mean, AlphaTauri, I think, will do a good job. I think the battle between AlphaTauri and McLaren, in my book, I think they're both very capable. It depends on how they turn the corner, you know. I don't think we can expect Tsunoda to do as well as he did today, but I think we can expect Gasly to do a very good job. But it's just turning that corner over the next 2 weeks to getting the, you know, a race weekend mentality into your head, as opposed to a all-day thrash, you know, 4 hours in the morning, 4 hours in the afternoon. It's a lot different whenever you haven't got so much time at the track and you've got to make it work for you. So one of those two, I think, will be the ones that step up the game and lead that midfield pack.
I have to say, I do wonder if it will be McLaren. Prior to the test, I'd have probably said it should be Ferrari and the Aston Martin will be there, and it's still going to be close in that group, so it won't take much of a swing. But McLaren, I wasn't too upbeat about, because I thought the compromises of the Mercedes power unit might hold them back a little bit in terms of the packaging, but it just looks like it's working, the car's running and doing what it should do, which is really, really encouraging for them. So yeah, we'll see. I think definitely agree there's going to be that divide whatever happens, but yeah, the big question is going to be Red Bull or Mercedes. Whatever happens, testing has given us a bit of reason to be hopeful there may be a fight at the front. We're not necessarily guaranteeing it, because testing is testing, but it's been a slightly surprising 3 days with these carryover cars. So plenty to look forward to when the Bahrain Grand Prix gets underway in a couple of weeks' time. Thanks very much, Mark Hughes and Gary Anderson, for your insights. Have a look at therace.com, and don't forget the hyphen loads to read there, including Mark's pace analysis, that piece Gary referenced, analysing the rear end of the Red Bull. Do check out our YouTube channel as well. Search for The Race. And if you have a look, there's the top tech secrets already revealed in F1 testing, which has plenty of Gary's insight included in that as well, including what he was talking about with the Red Bull suspension. And also check out our sister podcast, Bring Back V10s, which tells classic F1 stories. We'll be back later in the week to take a more reflective look at all the lessons from testing. But in the meantime, thanks for joining us during F1's short but sweet pre-season.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.